Good evening, James McCanny here with my science hour, February 19th, 2009, going directly into the show. And tonight, the main science topic, the first in a four-part series, and actually these shows can tend to lead into a few more, but I've scheduled four shows, this one plus the three upcoming shows, to talk about our good friend, Planet X. And now the reason for this is because of all of the misinformation out there. And so, first of all, I want to let you know that there is no known Planet X object crashing or careening into the solar system at this time. But there sure is a lot of activity out there. The disinformation activity, which would lead one to believe that maybe somewhere in the background, NASA and the other boys, what I call the Tier 1 science, know something and they want to control public perception. So anyway, that has spurred me to produce this next oncoming show regarding the topic of Planet X. And first of all, I just want to dispel any rumors. There are many, 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 many Planet X objects. Not very many of them would be Earth-threatening. NASA has already discovered dozens and dozens of these and publicly announced it. They have satellites doing search programs for nothing but Planet X-type objects. And, of course, if you've listened to my show, you'll understand that the biggest, what I call the great deception, is to try and get the public to think that Planet X is going to look like a big orange ball in the sky. And that is the great deception, because everybody from the Pope to everybody else in the, say, secret world knows that it will look like a giant comet. And so anyway, I've certainly talked about that enough. And, of course, my theoretical work also explains that this thing will look like a giant comet. Any large object, any object coming into the solar system would produce a cometary tail as it discharges the solar capacitor. And this 2009 also is the year of the plasma discharge comet model. Of course, that's celebrating the 30-year anniversary of me presenting this material at Cornell University when I was working there on the faculty. So a very long, rich history, and of course, I've been revolving around this topic my entire career. There's certainly tons of Johnny-come-latelys, and everybody seems to have an internet site telling you this or that. And so for people who've been around this topic and listened to it for years and heard all of the BS and the goofy people they get up on radio shows, etc., etc., and also for the newer people who they've heard the topic, they want to know more about it, but all of this is very confusing. And so that's why I'm giving this four-part series. And tonight's show, I will concentrate on the topic of public perception. What is the public perception of the term Planet X? So anyway, that's the main science topic. That's a little bit of an introduction. But first, just a couple quick announcements. I'm not going to talk about economics, but all I'm going to tell people is become prepared, because the so-called stimulus package or whatever is just a kind of a stalling technique. It's not going to work. It's going to fail. And then they're going to have to, of course, pass another one, then another one, and basically push this country into government-sponsored socialism, which is the goal. You will all be working and dependent. Either you're working for the government or you're paying the government, which means you are a slave to the government. So the government is the central entity. It's very scary, I would say, to hear a president utter the following words, that the government is the only entity which can save this country. That's Obama's words, and he thinks that. So he's their man in Washington, and of course, it caters to the fear tactics that are used by international bankers to keep them in control, enough said. Okay, just a kind of a comical note here. When Bush Jr. left the White House, I didn't see any fanfare at all. He just kind of made an exit stage left, and that was the end of it. I don't think anybody, including the Republicans, were sad to leave that see that little guy leave office. But at any rate, enough of that. And I'm introducing a new product tonight, and this was actually available quite a few months ago. But as everything that I do now, very carefully did the field testing on this product, and it's a new water filter product on the market, and it has a very specific place. As you know, right now I have two water filter products on my webpage, the Dalton full-size stainless steel water filter with will take up to four Super Sterisil ceramic, three-part ceramic Dalton filters. And, of course, these are excellent filters, a three-part filter where the carbon is contained within the inner and outer shell. The personal travel emergency water filter is 1 liter capacity, uses one of the same ceramic filters, the Dalton ceramic filters. And this is one thing I've kept, and with the new product that's going to be announced tonight, the one thing that's common amongst the three water filters that I now sell, the full-size stainless steel with up to four of the ceramic filter elements, the personal travel emergency water filter with one ceramic filter element. Now, this new one will have up to five. The thing that's common amongst all of these filter products is they use the exact same water filter element. And this is the beauty of this. It's a system that really makes sense. And now the new product has a very specific use. Let me start out with the stainless steel water filter. It is meant for emergency long-term use. I mean, this is something I expect to be using in 50 years, and I expected to give it to my kids, and their kids will take it after that, and be able to use this for hundreds and hundreds of years if necessary. And, of course, that would require having enough filter elements, and so that's why I tell people to kind of stock up. And, of course, these are cleanable. You just rub the surface a little bit, and you can reuse these hundreds of times. You don't throw the old filter elements out. You could save those and in a pinch in the future continue to use those hundreds and hundreds of times, because understand, in the future we're probably not going to be dealing with all the chemicals that we have in the water today. You're mainly going to be filtering out sludge and mud and crud like that. So the even though the center carbon part might be at capacity, let's say, the outside ceramic filter could be reused hundreds and hundreds of times, and so you would save those ceramic filters. But anyway, the new product, and I'll make this brief because I want to get right into the Planet X topic. It'll be posted by the time this show airs. The posting will be on my webpage, JMCCSCI. The new product is a HD. Let me get my notes here so I say this correctly. It is an HDPE. Look at my notes here. High-density polyethylene, FDA-approved plastic. It's 3.5-gallon capacity. We'll use up to 5 regular Super Sterisil Dalton filter elements. And it will come with plugs, so you only have to use one. And, of course, that would give you about 7 gallons per day. But you could use 5 of the filter elements to get up to 35 gallons per day of fresh filtered water. This is the largest plastic water filter on the market, and it's only priced at $219. Now, I want to say that, in my opinion, a plastic water filter is not a long, long, long-term plastic water filter solution like the stainless steel. You want the stainless steel for that long-term emergency use, but for people looking for a second filter for the cabin, maybe for a second one for out in the work shed out behind or something like that, this is priced right. And plus, you get the five filter elements with it, $219. Go to my webpage for more details. It's a bigger capacity than anything else on the market. It has a little stand so you can put a glass or a cup under it and drain the water out of the spigot. It has an oversized spigot, so the water runs out very fast. It costs less than any other comparable filter on the market. It has more filters. It'll go up to five filter elements. And these, of course, are the Dalton three-part super sterisol filters. Anyway, more information on that on my webpage, and I will be giving out more information on this show in future weeks. But this is something, as I say, if you've already got your stainless steel water filter and you want a second one, but it's $319 for the stainless, it's just a little too much, this fits the bill. And like I say, it uses all of the same water filter elements as the personal water filter and the full-size stainless steel water filter. By the way, the stainless steel capacity is 2 gallons. This one is 3.5, almost double the capacity, and will filter up to 35 gallons per day of fresh water. Anyway, enough of that, but I'm very excited about that because it's, as I said, made of high-density polyethylene plastic. It's FDA-approved plastic, food-grade plastic, that will not be affected if it sits in the, gets warmed up. Other plastics that I've seen are will leach out and have the BPA, biphenyl A toxin in it. When left in the sunlight, it would leach that toxin out, so made out of plastic. But this is, as I say, FDA-approved, very high-quality plastic. And, okay, that's it. On to the topic of Planet X. Now, I want to start out talking to scientists, because scientists, of course, are programmed. They're some of the most programmed people on the planet. And the reason for this is all done through peer pressure. You talk about peer review in the journals. Peer review means that your peers have to review your articles if they're going to be published in a scientific journal. So there's a peer pressure to, it's unwritten, but it's very much there. And every scientist knows this. They know what their boundaries are. They know what they can talk about and what they cannot talk about. Let's talk about global warming. There's a very big political correctness regarding global warming. Scientists are ostracized. They lose funding if they criticize the global warming agenda. Other topics, anything in geology, evolutionary biology, astronomy, especially astronomy, space science, astrophysics, the study of ancient topics like archaeology, anthropology, all of these topics have to corroborate and go along with the NASA-prompted story that the solar system started all at one time billions of years ago and nothing has happened since. And you see that all of these fundamental theories that are taught in colleges and universities regarding the history of the Earth, etc., and the history of the solar system, geology, the history of man, mythology, the history of religion, etc., all of these have to corroborate with the story that is with NASA, so to speak, at the pinnacle. And remember that anybody who comes in and disagrees with this or whose research disagrees with this is very much ostracized. So, and the other part of this is there have been entire disinformation campaigns launched against and to make silly and ridiculous the claims that there could be a planet X. And so within all of this framework, all of this public framework of information which is coming at the public from all different directions, there is a big, there's a huge amount of peer pressure on scientists. And it's too easy for the scientists, the physicists, the astrophysicists, the people involved in the space science world, or the people who do, say, weather modeling, or the Sun-Earth Connection program at NASA, on and on and on. It's too easy for them to simply take one of these knee-jerk reaction responses, put it in their head, shut the door, and they don't ever have to deal with it again. Because it's understood that if they stay within their little framework, their little cubicle, their little box, so to speak, and don't ever wander out of it and don't ever cross those lines, then they don't have any problems. It's the people who go, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Remember that I talk about dating of finds. Let's talk about the turtle that was found in the Antarctic a couple weeks ago and announced. This was a tropical turtle whose skeleton was found in the Arctic, within the Arctic Circle. Now, of course, way out of place, but then they said, well, this is obviously millions of years old, this turtle fossil, and why would they pick a date out of mind, out of reach? Well, the reason is because there's no chance for them to be caught up in this, well, this hypothetical situation where it could have only been 4,000 years ago. How on earth did they come up with these dates? And it's after, like, minutes after the discovery, they go, oh, that's 7 million years old. Well, of course, the one thing they have to do is pick a date that is out of sight, out of mind, and so far away that it could never, ever be cataloged or misinterpreted as being a date when planet X could have come through the solar system and done some damage. So remember that, first of all, there are many planet X objects, but the scientists, they want to simplify all of this so they don't have to deal with it. It's kind of like, let's say it's this way. It's like a parent who has a child who's really a problem. Problem in school, problem in social situations, problem in when they go over to other people's house. And, you know, the kid basically controls the parents type of thing. And it's the easiest thing for some parents to do is just go, oh, Johnny's just having a bad day today. Or little Susie, oh, she's just having a bad day. Let's go home and everything will be better. And really, the kid is controlling the parent. And that's the case with Planet X and scientists. They don't analyze the data relative to the data. They first have to have this mental block that the sun is powered at the center of the sun, which is incorrect. It's powered at the surface of the sun. It's electrical in nature. They deny the electrical nature of the sun. Or the fact that the solar wind has an electrical component to it because there's an excess current of protons in the solar wind. I go to meeting after meeting after meeting of international meetings where I go with the scientists who are doing the measurements. They're giving their papers. They're presenting what right now turns out to be very good material. But they're all locked into this, oh, these are magnetic effects. They don't really understand the causal effect of all of the things they are measuring are due to one simple fact, the fact that there is surface fusion on the sun and that there is an electrical component to the solar wind, which creates a differential voltage, a potential difference in the solar system, and that potential difference drives the entire electrical nature of the solar system. And thousands and thousands and thousands, some of the meetings I go to have over 15,000 scientists at them from all over the world, and not a one of them has the big picture. And not one of them is allowed to see the bigger picture. They're only allowed to measure their one little box, their one little thing, and give their one little talk. But they never can reach out and expand and say, this is the overall driving force for everything we're seeing. And when I go to the meetings, that's what I present, time after time after time. This is, I've been going to these through my entire career, throughout the 80s, 90s, and now into the 2000 era, up to 2009, literally 30 years since this was, I was at Cornell presenting this at meetings. And the scientists simply have a mental block. The new PhDs coming along, I just want to make a comment too, and these are wonderful people, don't get me wrong. They're a lot of the people coming up with PhDs, new PhDs, they get their first postdoc or first position, and they simply are the greenest people on the planet. That's why I'm addressing scientists first with this topic about Planet X. So let me set down some ground rules for the scientists and for the public, who I'm basically right now talking to scientists, but with the public listening. And I know a lot of these guys listen to this show, and there's a lot of them that support what I do, but they can't say it publicly. But anyway, the point is, there is not one Planet X. It doesn't revolve around some goofy lady who thinks she talks to aliens. This is not Planet X. It doesn't revolve around a bunch of internet sites that talk about the Mayan calendar in 2012 and the galactic alignment, none of which has any scientific or reality merit at all. But you see that there's such a tremendous peer pressure involved. If one of these professionals comes out and says something, they'll go, oh, well, you're one of those goofy people over there. And they could lose their funding, they could lose their reputation, their dignity, they could lose their ability to work with the good equipment. They're locked in. And so this is the current situation with scientists. And so what do you think is going to filter down to the public? They can't talk about this in public. They would be ostracized. They would lose their careers, their retirement. I mean, everything they've worked for, these guys have worked very hard to get their degrees. And by the way, when you work hard to get a degree, like I have a master's degree in physics. I'm very proud of it. I worked very hard for it. I have a lot of experience. And there's a lot of people out there that try and call me doctor, but I'm not. I'm not a doctor, and I wouldn't pretend to be one. But there are people out there who would. There are people out there with no degree at all who try and present themselves, and like they're just internet hoaxers. But oddly enough, some of these are actually supported by NASA. NASA every day produces work that supports some of these websites. Isn't that interesting? Well, why would NASA do that? Because NASA is part and parcel to the disinformation campaign regarding Planet X, the topic of Planet X. And once again, remember that NASA has made a public announcement that they've discovered dozens of these new planets out there. They're of all different sizes, and they know for a fact that eventually they're going to start finding big ones. But understand that a lot of these objects are in very distant orbits. They're not going to come into the solar system at any time soon. But the question is there one rogue planet out there, one object that's going to come into the solar system and affect us? Now, of course, then let's go back to the historical perspective. From the beginning of written time, the old texts all talk about the destruction of Earth. And when you see it, I might comment that the modern Bible has been hacked and slaughtered and dissected so much that you really can hardly make it out anymore. But it's there if you read between the lines. The entire, Revelations and the Genesis and the Sermon on the Mount. You look in all of the other traditions, whether it's Arab, whether it's the ancient text. You look in the Kolbrin, etc. All of these texts, which have been handed down to us, talk about the same thing: the rebirth of man and the objects in the sky, which are obviously great comets, the rain of fire and brimstone, the naphtha coming in, the great flood that came in from outside the planet. Look how many scientists who are geologists go, there was a dam that broke, and there was a great flood that came in and formed the Mediterranean Ocean. Oh, and that was the great flood. No, the great flood was 40 days and 40 nights of rain. Not a dam that broke, not an earthen dam that broke and flooded the Mediterranean. You see how these scientists will twist and turn and say anything except the truth. And I was talking with somebody the other day, actually, about the encryption codes and the fact that when I did my prime number work and released that, the Calculate Primes book, that the encryption codes were broken. But to see the denial, the level of denial in both the mathematical world and the encryption world, which is a very esoteric little world, and also within secure computing, the amount of denial that went on, the only place there wasn't any denial was in the places where it really counted, in the military satellites. Those guys were all over it immediately because they had to work with this issue that the encryption codes, the secure encryption codes based on prime numbers, had now been broken. The biochips that they had warehouses and warehouses full of these ready to implant in the public, those were all broken because of the breaking of the encryption codes, because when you would tap into one of these to prevent people from hacking in and changing the information and distributing misinformation into the collection system, which was a vast computer system, you needed encryption. And so the encryption codes and all of those were broken. And so there was a tremendous amount of reverberation due to that. But it was interesting to see the level of denial and the public, disinformation campaigns to make people think that the encryption codes were still sound. So at any rate, the point here is that when you're dealing with sensitive topics that have far-reaching ramifications, denial, it's really fun almost to see these people's brains lock up and they just can't talk to you anymore. I was talking to some people the other night that talking about suborbital flight and airplanes and aircraft design. And the topic got on to some of the things that are being done in the world today. And I made a comment that one of the projects that's trying to stretch a Learjet won't work. It's a very bad design, but it'll get immediate FAA approval, because those people are funded through standard funding routines, and they're somewhat associated with NASA and the government. But to take an existing airframe and stretch it, what you're doing is you're changing the vibrational modes of the aircraft, and so now you have a completely untested airframe with the vibrational modes, which are very different, and the stresses that this craft would come in would come on this airframe as it came into re-entry from a low Earth orbit, a suborbit, like maybe 30-mile high orbit. There's no way to predict what's going to happen to that airframe because it's simply untested. Yet it would get FAA approval. But you take a guy like Bert Rutan, who is building a complete composite airframe that is, designed to withstand those kind of pressures and vibrations, etc. And he's going to have a very hard time getting funding because he's not hooked in with the government. Now, this is a form of denial that's very subtle, But remember that the FAA had nothing to do with aerospace at all, with manned flights, as long as NASA was doing it. NASA killed 17 people, and, the FAA was nowhere to be found, nor were they afterwards. So what I'm saying is that these subtle forms of denial creep in. And that's why I'm talking to scientists today, because they are one of the key elements in this entire process, and they're standing by while a bunch of crackpot scientists are trying to take the limelight. You have a bunch of scientists, one with a PhD in astronomy, who's never done anything in his career. Never published a paper, never done any research, never would attend any scientific meetings with any original research, has never done anything with his degree relative to the vast amount of work being done by real scientists who do research, who publish papers, who go to scientific meetings, and who are involved in real research. But yet this clown is all over the internet pretending like he's an expert. Has never looked down, he's not even allowed in the satellite rooms where this kind of data is being taken. But NASA will take and pay his freight to go out and put this kind of disinformation into your schools and into your kids' heads and promote the NASA party line. Now, NASA has two party lines, you have to understand. They have the disinformation. So there's, on the one hand, NASA is saying, Planet X, goofy. Look at those goofy people over there. They pretend to talk to aliens. It's a goofy topic. And on the other hand, NASA is publicly announcing that it has search programs for Planet X. How strange is that? Let's remember that NASA is the one, as far as the public is concerned, NASA is the one that broke the Planet X story to the public in 1983. They actually published an article through the New York Times and through other places. In fact, I just happen to have a copy of that here, September 6th. Let me see what the date is. I'm sorry. Go to the last page. January 30th, 1983. So a good 26 years ago, NASA, through the New York Times, by an author, a guy by the name of John Noble Wilford, and remember that the New York Times, when these science editors get a position there, it's a very high, very well-respected position, and they are there for a very long time. I remember seeing the name John Noble Wilford over and over and over again, all the time in the New York Times science section. But anyway, here's an article from January 30th, 1983, front page, it says, clues get warm in the search for Planet X. Let me read this again. January 30th, 1983, New York Times, front page, here's the title, by John Noble Wilford, science writer for the New York Times. The title is, clues get warm in the search for Planet X. Isn't that interesting? So remember that NASA is the one who originally brought the topic to the public's attention through the New York Times, and of course back then. Now let me give you a feel for what 1983 was like. NASA was very naive about how they presented information to the public. In 1979 to 81, I was at Cornell University, had access to NASA data, went to the scientific meetings on a daily basis where the data was coming in from the Pioneer, then the Voyager spacecraft, etc., and watched the information going on. I was able to confirm my own personal theoretical work, present my ideas there, to which I found that these people, the scientists there, and I could name off the whole laundry list of NASA scientists at Cornell at that time, because I knew them all, and the astrophysics department, I knew them, they knew me, and how they just couldn't understand the idea of electricity in outer space. They were measuring these things. They were measuring them with satellites that were not designed to measure these things, electrical conditions. They were very remiss to even admit there were magnetic effects in outer space. But at any rate, they were looking for gravitational-only explanations. And, of course, put on top of this, the fact that Carl Sagan was head cheese at Cornell at the time. David Duncan, chair of astronomy, a very prestigious position. And so here I am trying to buck the system from within Cornell, showing them that their data, the data that they were collecting, proved that what they were administering in terms of topics and theories, that those theories were not only a little wrong, they were all wrong. Not just a little, not a tweak, but they had to be completely replaced by an entire new set of physical principles based on electromagnetism, and that these were very subtle effects that worked through gravity, that gravity was the primary mover out there, but these effects that they were measuring when they got up very close to planets and moons around the solar system, the effects they were seeing were electrical in nature, and there was a primal moving cause for these. So at any rate, then I would tell them that comets were not dirty snowballs, and this was the equivalent to saying that the Pope is not Catholic in terms of astronomy. I mean, that's literally what it would be like. Imagine the time frame. I'm trying to give you a feeling for what it was like in 1983 when this article came out in the New York Times. NASA was very inexperienced at releasing information. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You would never see this kind of an article come out today, because NASA has filtering agencies at JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, at Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, and on. All of these NASA or NASA-related employees have to go through filtering agencies. When I go to scientific meetings, whether it's people in the Air Force or the Navy or the scientists from the Gulf South Research or wherever they're coming from, they all have to submit their information to a review board before it ever goes out to a scientific meeting. It has to be screened. Just a second, I have to get a drink of water. All of this material has to be screened. So at any rate, I just wanted to give you a perspective of what the mentality was in 1983. And of course, John Noble Wilford publishing this article in the New York Times and talking about the 10th planet as if it were about to be discovered, announced, etc. And so it's very important to understand that the entire public release of information came from NASA. So now, as I said, NASA is a two-headed dragon out there. One dragon head is the disinformation and all of the disinformation that they fund and support. The outreach clowns that run around pretending they're important when in reality NASA wouldn't let any of those guys in their front door. They don't do research. They've never published. They've never done any real science, but that's exactly who they want, because these are people with little egos that need a lot of ego support, and that's how they can get it, by pretending that they're somebody important when they're not. Okay, that's the one dragon head of NASA. The other dragon head of NASA over here is saying, yeah, there are dozens of these. Let me give you an example of how NASA is fully aware of my work and fully understanding that everything I'm doing is correct. Around the year 2000, they designed, built, and around the year 2002, they launched the first of a number of satellites that were meant to search to do ongoing automated searches for Planet X-type objects. Now, these satellites do not look for a round ball out there. They look for a fuzzy water cloud out in the far reaches of the solar system, beyond the orbit of Pluto. That's what they look for. They're not looking for a little round ball. So they know 100% that everything I'm doing is 100% correct. But they don't tell the public that. The public gets this garbage over here. Crazy lady talks to aliens talking about Planet X. And then you got the white hat astronomer, who's also paid by NASA, saying, oh, well, look, here's a PhD in astronomy, and says there is no Planet X, when on the other hand, NASA over here has entire search programs, and they've found dozens and dozens of Planet X objects. And for as far as I know, and of course they would never announce if they found one that had its earmark coming into the solar system and could possibly do damage to Earth, they would never announce that to the public. But they do let on enough to let the people in the science world know that they are out there looking. So now you have the scientist, the average scientist doing aerospace work, he has his project or his instrument on satellites that's measuring and they're interpreting the data. These scientists are in a kind of in the middle. They certainly don't want to talk about Planet X. They're in their little box, their mental box, so they cannot look outside and see the big picture. So all they're doing is, let's say, measuring a cross current in the aurora upper atmosphere of Earth, dealing with auroras. That would be one example of the kind of science being done. Or you might have scientists dealing with the multiple satellite systems that cross through and measure the solar wind and conditions at multiple places at the same time, the Themis and the other groups like that. But they all deal with their one teeny little piece of the pie, of the information pie. And of course, none of them can step back and say, you know, everything we're doing here is good work. We're making measurements. We're seeing flux ropes. We're seeing things connect. We're seeing the Earth connecting to the Sun. We're seeing things pulsate out there. We're seeing magnetic fields rise and fall. But what's causing all this? Hello, scientists. I know you're listening out there. What's causing all of this magnetic activity in a plasma? Plasmas of themselves would be very short-lived magnetically if there were not a overall driving force to keep this engine going. And that's why for 30 years I've been pounding this idea into these heads of these people, that there is an overall force, and it's very simple. There's a differential current in the solar wind that builds up an overall capacitor in the solar system, and all of the planets discharge this, and that is the overall moving effect of the entire solar system electrically. Gravity works just fine, except when you get to the point where the discharges are so large, as in the case with big comets. We saw Hale-Bopp change its orbit on a daily basis, and now that's a very good example. Let's look at the comet Hale-Bopp. Every day, the Cambridge ephemeris, which was on the internet, posted, changed every day. The orbit of Hale-Bopp was changing every day, and all of those we have recorded. But in retrospect, now they say, oh, well, it came a little bit close to Jupiter, and that's what changed its orbit from a 4,200-year to a 2,600-year orbit. Well, it's absolutely ridiculous, because the orbit changed on a daily basis, and they have their head in the sand, and it's just too big an embarrassment for them to admit that the dirty snowball comet model is wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And so now, in dealing with public perception, you have to filter through the peer pressure that's going on in the scientific community today. And that's what this first show is all about. Somewhat to give you a perspective Now, I can look at all of this. I can pick up a newspaper or a magazine article or a journal article today, read it, see who the authors are, what's their perspective, what little box are they coming out of, who screened that material before it ever got to where it was printed, and I can go back in and analyze, look at the list of references, and I can see who's connected with these people and where the chain of influence comes to put this article in a certain magazine or a journal. So at any rate, I can do that because I have decades of experience in doing this. Let's look at the whole laundry list of recent Johnny-come-latelys dealing with Planet X. Now, if you do a search for Planet X on the internet, good grief, do you come up with a bunch of garbage. If you look on the professional science side of it, garbage. If you look on the disinformation side, which is fully supported by NASA, and the disinformation crews, remember that there are people who have PhDs in disinformation. How to create public perception. How to influence the public to think a certain way. These are people who have PhDs. They're in groups. They're in think tanks. And they control large numbers of people who create the disinformation programs that you are bombarded by on a constant basis. So let's imagine that all of a sudden a topic comes out and is becoming publicly known, like the series of Planet X radio shows that I'm involved in right now. I got a laundry list of very interesting postings that came up in just the past half week since I announced this show, last Thursday night I announced that I would be doing a series on Planet X. I'll be doing some other radio shows dealing with this same topic to point people back to this page. And there is another web page which is very interesting. It should be coming out pretty soon. But it's done by an independent group of civilian researchers. Now, obviously, I have a good audience, a lot of very well-trained people out there, and they are contributing articles. They'll go out and they'll find little pieces of information and then write it up showing that, and of course, I don't have time to do all this. I'm involved in my own research. But what is wonderful is the public is catching on. This web page will have contributions, not my web page, but a totally new web page, will have contributions by everything from third graders up to grandmas and grandpas and everybody in between. Some of them are scientists, some of them are non-scientists. Some of them have called up and talked to some of the disinformation crews. There's a whole laundry list of input that has come into this. That's going into this new webpage, and I'll announce that here in the next show or so, what the URL to that is. But basically, identifying and, let's say, exposing the clowns that are running around the internet with misinformation. So that'll be very interesting. And what's more interesting is when you put it all in one place, it's going to become very, very obvious to you, the reader. And, of course, I don't want my web page clouded up with all this garbage. So I had no interest in creating this page. But it was interesting to see that independent people, like I say, everybody from third graders to grandmas and grandpas, people from all over the world have contributed to this. Now that they understand what is going on. And so, anyway, that will be coming out soon. And as I said, it's very interesting. Once you see all of this misinformation, what the biggest thing you realize is this is all being coordinated. All of these different people that come from here and over there and that person there and this person is a professional astronomer and this person is a nutcase that says they talk to aliens and on and on and on. And they're all coming from the same group. They're all supported by the same group. They're all controlled. The timing of when they appear and when they don't appear is controlled by the same group. And so it's very interesting to see all of this in one spot to make the public aware of what is going on. And now let's look, why would somebody do this? Why would somebody go to this extent? And of course, that would be the first question I would ask if I were somebody new to this topic and they were listening to me talk right now. They'd go, why in the earth, why would anybody go to this length, this amount of money, this amount of effort, con these number of people into being the front people? And by the way, when you see the front people, the ones that are out there in the public eye, so to speak, in this goofy Planet X part of the NASA distribution of Planet X information, what you're going to find is they are all pretty much nobodies. They are people that wouldn't be anything at all if it weren't for this topic. So NASA supports this. The disinformation crew, they are experts at ferreting out people who don't have a life. Let's put it that way. That's the simplest way I can put it. And so what you're going to see on this webpage that I'm going to announce in a week or so is that all of these people have one thing in common. If it weren't for this topic, if it weren't for this, their ability to latch on to, say, 2012 or the Mayan calendar or any of these other topics, if it weren't for their ability to do that and somebody supporting them invisibly, those people would not have a life at all. Let me repeat that. These people would not have any kind of life at all. So it's very interesting the type of people they pick to stick out there for you, the public, to view. And, of course, the public is kind of confused because this is all being thrown at you at one time. Then you got NASA over here on their white horse playing the good guy like they don't have to talk about it at all. And that's the situation. So the purpose of this show is somewhat to set the stage for the upcoming shows regarding Planet X. So the main topic of this show, the first one in the Planet X series, is public perception. How does the public view this? What's being thrown at the public so they will view it in a certain light? How much effort is being put behind this? Now, I want to say this. There is an enormous, enormous amount of effort being placed on this. And let me give you an example. Now, a couple weeks ago, the end of my show, I talked about the Pope and how he immediately got a hold of NASA, or let's say the Vatican, let me be more specific there, and I'm sure the Pope was involved in this, but the Vatican has a vast group of scholars. And the part of the Vatican entourage of scholars are astronomers, mind you. And remember also, just as a little part of the Planet X thing, when the Planet X topic was heating up about 10 years ago, there was a whole crew of French astronomers who had been involved in the Vatican Planet X search program. They were on a gondola up in the French Alps, and it just happened to fall and kill all of them. Do you remember that? Very interesting. So there's some very, let's put it this way, there have been a lot of people who have gone asunder very mysteriously. A guy named Harrington, a guy named Schumacher had a very untimely and very strange demise out in the outback of Australia. Schumacher being in Australia, and of course Harrington was in New Zealand, and they all dealt with the issue of Planet X in the official sense, working on projects for NASA and the Naval Research Laboratory official government searches. So we know that there has been a lot of official work on this topic, but what is pushed off to the public, the amount of effort being put into disinformation campaigns for the public, is enormous. And then you say, well, why? Why would they do that? And let me just include the issue about the Vatican that I started. when Hale-Bopp first came into the solar system, I heard about it. I called up the people I knew at Goddard Space Flight Center, and I got the secretary, who I was on a first-name basis with. She recognized my voice, and I said, "Hey, what's going on there?" And I could hear all this yelling and confusion in the background. This is at Goddard Space Flight Center in the Space Science Group. She says, "Hale-Bopp. Hale-Bopp is huge." And I thought she meant in the news story sense, but what she really meant was that Hale-Bopp really was huge. And then the next thing I found out was that it was on a direct collision course with Earth. And the thing I found out a little bit later was that the Vatican, when it got news of this, got a hold of NASA. The Vatican procures NASA and says, "Is this wormwood?" At this time, Hale-Bopp was a giant comet. A giant comet. Not a big orange ball, a giant comet. So who knows specifically that if something comes in and is wormwood, that it is a giant comet? The Vatican. How would they know that? What are they hiding? Why wasn't this information filtered out through the Catholic Church and administered to the public? Now, the public has been listening to the Sermon on the Mount for hundreds, thousands of years in sermons. What does the Sermon on the Mount say? That when the time draws nigh, look to the heavens for your redemption, and what will you see? The stars seeming to fall from the heavens, the meteorites, the meteor streams coming in as part of accompanying the comet, a large comet. You would see the moon turning to blood, the fire and the brimstone, the naphtha coming out of the sky, and all of these things are signs that you would look for. And interestingly enough, I wouldn't doubt if somewhere in there they talked about a large comet. But see how much of this has been filtered out from the public. In the Colburn, it's very clear that it would be a large comet. So the number one thing apparently that's on these people's minds is that they want to control the public. They don't want to instill fear in the public's mind. And in fact, without telling the public, they're actually going to create the fear scenario that they're afraid of creating. It's because when the public sees this, if it happens someday, and it very likely could within our lifetimes, the people that are alive now very well could see this. I'm just going to bring up one last piece of disinformation that's floating around, that the Planet X could come into the solar system in 2009, whip around Earth, and then come back in 2012. All of this is pure garbage. There's not a single one of these internet clowns running around today that has any piece of real data that would allow them to make any such claims. And so I'm amazed that they're allowed to do this, but when you see who's supporting them, they are allowed to go around telling of imminent world disaster without any credibility at all, without any real resources or information. So join me next week and in the upcoming weeks for the ongoing series. I'll go into many different aspects of this concept of Planet X. And, of course, I've given shows before regarding Planet X, but this series is going to be a little bit different. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And, as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.